that.
We are going to open our Senate Committee on Education. Just so people know, I've always wanted a huskier voice to talk with, so I was given the opportunity when I got this cold a week ago, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better, so if my voice doesn't break, I will try to keep going on this meeting, but it's been a rough week to this point, and I look forward to getting better. With that, we're going to start off our agenda with an organizational part of our meeting. We have committee rules that we had a conversation up here ahead of time and said maybe we should just vote on these at the beginning since they're all the same in the chamber with everybody, but we'll take up it up at a different time. Right now, we have to pass rules to run our committee by, and with that, Senator Knope.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the proposed committee rules.
Senator Knope moves to adopt the proposed committee rules. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any opposition? Seeing none, it is passed. We now have a rule. So with that, we might as well do an introduction of our committee members. So I'll start with, to my left.
To your left?
It's a different because experience being on the far left.
You're on the far left.
They do that on purpose.
Senator Bearchiger.
Senator Herman Bearchiger, District 2, which is Grants Pass and Josephine County and the north part of Jackson County.
Lee Beyer, Senate District 6, which is central part of Lane and Linn counties.
Senator Tim Knope, representing Bend, Redmond, Sisters, and Tumalo.
I'll go to the other end now, so my prerogative.
Sarah Gelster, Albany and Corvallis, and recognizing for the first time the only female on the committee.
And she's
shocking,
on the right.
You haven't realized that before.
It's just in this moment that occurred to me. So
recognize that the previous time we had, there were no females. So we are appreciative that you are here.
I do my part.
Mark Hass, representing Beaverton and Alloa in Washington County.
Arnie Roblin, Senate District 5, which goes from Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay and over into Fall City and Fall City and Sheridan. So parts of seven counties. But with that, and
Richard Donovan, Committee Services, Committee Staff.
So thank you all for all you being here as well as all these other people. Oh, and here we go. We're just doing introductions, and we saved you for last. Or, as you would say, the best for last.
Well, I would never say that, Mr. Chair. Jeff Grew, Senate District 1, and most of the time a farmer, I like to think, but been involved in education for more years than I want to count.
Okay, well, thank you for that. Today, because of the way the rules are, and because we have to give notice for bills, we are going to have a group of informational hearings to get as much information on the record as we can so that when we have our next meeting, we can take action. But we could not actually take action today on these bills because it's the first day of the session, and we had to post it, and we couldn't post until the day opened, so we didn't have time to do that. And so just some of the little intricacies that happen in the legislature. That's why it's information only today. We'll use that information to have actual hearings with possible work sessions on Wednesday. So with that, I'm going to open an informational meeting on athlete concussion treatment by chiropractic physicians and naturopathic physicians. And with that, I'll invite Vern Sabo.
Good afternoon. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Dr. Vern Sabo representing the Oregon Chiropractic Association. I'll make my comments very brief. This proposal fixes a oversight with Senate Bill 521 last session and simply inserts chiropractic physicians and naturopathic physicians into the list of healthcare professionals that can assess an athlete suspected of suffering a concussion and determine if and when they can return to play. That's the substance of the proposal. I'd be willing to answer any questions.
Any questions? Mm-hmm. I guess the biggest one I have is that, as you said, it was a oversight in the previous bill. Previous to that, did naturopaths and chiropractors have the ability to do that?
Yes. Well, I've had team physicians that served on high schools and continue to do so at the University College level, professional level, and also on the U.S. Olympic medical team, and have done so, as I say, for decades. So.
Okay. Any other questions?
I'm sure I'd just say if it's good enough for the U.S. Olympic team, that's probably a pretty good standard.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who signed up?
Nope.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So with that, we will close our informational meeting on athletic concussions treatment by chiropractors. We will open an informational hearing on the postgraduate scholar program. And you can start.
Go down there?
Please do.
Thanks.
Yeah, go ahead and read the bill thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The presentation is in relation to Senate Bill 1537, which establishes criteria by which school districts may establish postgraduate scholar programs to receive and expand certain programs from state school fund monies. And it directs the Department of Ed and the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to submit reports related to those programs and how they're used. There are -1 and -2 amendments available on HOLIS.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the record, for members of the committee, for your record. I'm still Sarah Gelser, State Senator from Senate District 8, which includes Corvallis and Albany. And since it's the Education Committee and we are talking about innovative measures that improve high school graduation rates, I have to point out that the Albany School District just posted a 95% four-year on-time graduation rate, which is extraordinary. Corvallis is at nearly 90% four-year graduation rate. And during the time period that the fifth-year program was implemented in Corvallis and under the leadership of Superintendent Aaron Prince, we've seen remarkable growth in Corvallis, a double-digit growth in our high school graduation rate, particularly in the subgroups. From 2012, economically disadvantaged students, their four-year graduation rate was 45.7. 3 years later, it's 73.3. ELL students were at 32.4, are up to 46.7. Hispanic students have jumped in 3 years from 55.9 to 81.1. And special education students in 3 years have doubled from 31.5 to 64.2. And I would submit to you that there's something in the sauce in the Mid-Valley that we should be looking at across the state. So the reason that we are here today is to discuss Senate Bill 1537, great. All the bill numbers are new, which is the postgraduate scholar program. This grows out of the discussion we had last session about fifth-year programs. How much do they cost? Are they fair? Are they appropriate? And the questions that swirled around that were ones of equity. Is this something that could be accessible to anybody in whatever district they lived in around the state? Sustainability. If everybody participated, could we do that without swamping the state school fund? Federal money on the table. Were we leaving money on the table using state funds when the federal government could be picking up the tab for some of this? Were we encouraging students to get college credits in grades 9 through 12? Were we doing that in an aggressive enough way? And if all those questions were answered, is it ever appropriate to use state school fund for college tuition for a student that has met the requirements for a standard high school diploma? This bill attempts to answer all of those questions and is the result of a work group that drew people from all over the state to Albany for 4 or 5 work group meetings. People drove from as far away as Klamath Falls and Redmond to put together this plan. Basically, the way that the new program would work is this. We promised severe sideboards, and they are. The first thing is that a student cannot participate as a postgraduate scholar, and a postgraduate scholar is a student that has completed all of the requirements for a standard four-year diploma in 4 years. They cannot come back and be supported to attend community college if they are eligible for the Oregon Promise. They must apply for the Oregon Promise, and if they're eligible to go, they must use that pathway. If they are eligible, and this is in both the -1 and -2 amendments, if they are eligible for a Pell Grant, and they must apply and demonstrate what their award level was, if they are eligible for a Pell Grant that will pay for the cost of tuition at a community college for 1 year. We limit it to 1 year only. for districts to support a student who has completed a high school graduation requirement for a standard diploma, the majority of the students they're serving in the district have to not be those kids. So that means the majority of kids earning credit on a college campus have to be students in grades 9 through 12. So there we go to encouraging students to earn college credit before the 12th grade. Students who are earning or have earned a GED, a modified diploma, or an extended diploma, who districts continue to be responsible for and receive state school fund for, or students that are in an at-risk category. They have left an alternative high school education program. They've come out of the correction system. They were students that had dropped out. So that is where the majority of this focus is going to. The district must have a signed contract with the local community college that clearly lays out the responsibilities of both entities. The district has to commit some of its own resources to doing this. They have to demonstrate that they have enough FTE to provide a one-to-one face-to-face visit on their school district campus with each of these students at least twice a month. The students can only attend the community college that's in the service area, that whose service area is includes the high school from which they graduated, and the student must continue to live in the school district from which they graduated from high school. So we have really narrowed this down to a very small number of students. In addition, we scale back the reimbursement rate for these students. Right now, districts are getting a 1.0. The numbers we saw last year when we talked about this included a full weight plus special weights. They will be eligible for no special weights. This year, they would get the full weight. Next year, it would drop to 0.85. The third year, it would drop to 0.75. The other benefit of doing this is we can finally quantify exactly how much does this cost and how many students are we serving. What we learned when we individually surveyed districts is that the numbers that we received last year that talked about the number of students returning for a fifth year weren't just these students. It included special education students that were still in transition programs. It included students that did not graduate from high school in 5 years. It included students that were enrolled in community college programs that were in grades 9 through 12. So this gives us a very precise mechanism to identify the cost. And then it tells us to come back in 2018, look at how much we've spent, and discuss what's the best way to do this. Is that state school fund rate too high? Should there be state school funds spent at all, or might there be another mechanism? So that answers all of the questions about why state school fund, and is it ever appropriate to use state school fund for these purposes? I would argue that it is always appropriate to use state school fund for the purpose of increasing a high school graduation rate. With these sideboards, what we are creating is a carrot to keep kids in school districts to graduate from high school that otherwise would leave. We are not talking about first-generation college attenders. We are talking about first-generation high school graduates. And I believe that use of state school fund for innovative programs that help kids that otherwise were falling through the cracks really does make a difference. We've got a superintendent here today to talk to you, a principal that runs a program, and a couple of kids. And just the last thing that I would say is that this is a tremendous complement to the Oregon Promise program. It creates a safety net for those kids who truly would have no other way to go to community college, who want to go. We are talking about kids that have less than a 2.5 grade point average. And you can be a really smart kid and have a 2.0 grade point average. You can be a kid that was homeless, that was a foster kid, that was moving around, have a 1.8 grade point average, and that is a huge victory that you made it across your graduation stage. And they are not eligible for a Pell Grant to send them to school. These are the very kids who community college can transform their lives, break the cycle of poverty, and set them up to be economically self-sufficient and really start a good life for themselves and their families. So with that, I'm glad to answer any questions. Yes.
Senator.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate the work that you and others did on this. I just want to make sure I'm clear in my mind who would still qualify for K through 12 money to use for college purposes. If it's not kids who would qualify for Pell Grant, And who's left out there?
Sure. So who is left would be just your general kids in grades 9 through 12, who I don't think that's the concern anyway. It would be students that are receiving a higher level of support because they're still in special ed, so your modified diploma and extended diploma and GED students. It would be, after that, it would be students that had less than a 2.5 grade point average and for whatever reason were not eligible for the Pell that would support them. So they could be the same middle-class families that you talked about when we talked about why the Oregon Promise was important. They're just not quite there to be able to get that support to go. In a lot of cases, these could be students that are homeless and who are unattached from their families. Their families really are not providing them with the basic support that you would expect, and certainly not stepping up to provide the information to complete the FAFSA that would be necessary. These are some of the kids that we lose really quickly. And they're not necessarily in the foster care system, but their families just are not, for whatever reason, able to be there to support them as they turn 18.
Okay. Yeah. Do you know what percentage of population that are now using the fifth-year plans this new percentage would be? Is it, okay, that'd be 50% of everybody that's using it now, or 25 or 85?
Chair Roblin, Senator Haas, we tried to figure out that number. It's very difficult because of the records that districts keep to go back and look at who their students are. You would have to go back and look transcript by transcript and understand very personal information about families. But what I can tell you is in the very first year, next year, we will spend less money on fifth-year programs than we did this year, even if other programs do that. That's because every kid that's currently a fifth-year student that has a 2.5 or greater, they're out. That's the entire SIO school district. SIO has a 3.0 grade point average participation requirement for their program, so all of those kids are out.
Any other questions of Senator Gelser?
No. And I just want to thank everybody that helped work on this, and I'm excited for you to hear from some of these kids and Eric Wright, who's one of my favorite administrators anywhere. He's also a pretty good actor.
So next we'll invite Eric Wright, Journey Myers, Keisha Ifta, thank you, Shaya, and Isaac Smart. I've been out of the schools. I didn't get all these names anymore. I used to be reasonably good.
Well, thank you, Senator Roblin and the committee, for the chance to come and share a little bit. We are very excited that there is something called Oregon Promise that can help more kids in Oregon go to college. We also recognize that there are a lot of students for whom that is not going to be the answer. I think the 2.5 GPA criteria is the part that I want to talk about today.
You need to identify yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's a good teaching trap for the people who have to follow you. See, so I won't have to do it for them. So
I am Eric Wright. I'm the Alternative Pathways Coordinator and principal at College Hill High School in Corvallis, Oregon.
Thank you.
I apologize.
No problem.
I am just here today to talk about in support of Senate Bill 1537. As I was saying, Oregon Promise is a great opportunity to support more kids to go to college, but it doesn't solve the problem for a number of students. And I know I can speak mostly for my school. I'm going to try to keep it personal and local. Our school graduates about 50 students a year, and in last year's graduating class, of those 50 students at our alternative high school, 35 of those students, or 70%, went on to college and are in college this year through the program that our fifth-year program that we call Running Start. As we looked at the criteria for Oregon Promise, I brought in all of our seniors to go through the application process, and we learned that of our 50 seniors, only 7 have the 2.5 GPA to be eligible for Oregon Promise. And there are so many different reasons. Some of the students struggled with homelessness and having a ton of success in high school, particularly before they came to our alternative program, was a struggle. Some of the students are parenting. One of our seniors has a 2-year-old daughter, and her journey has been circuitous at best, and getting to graduation has been challenging, but she has a dream to go on and become a labor and delivery nurse, and because of several reasons would not be eligible for a Pell Grant and does not have a 2.5 GPA. We have a couple other students who I spoke with who said, you know what, I was lazy my ninth grade year, and I got a 0.83 GPA, and that's really, really, really hard to overcome. When you look at the mathematics to average a 2.5 over 4 years, that is just a big challenge and a big thing to overcome. I think this team that got together to look at Senate Bill 1537 was really looking creatively at trying to figure out how we could, as Sarah was saying, complement Oregon Promise and serve those students who are not able to be served as a result of that. And our goal and our mission is to educate all students and make sure there are opportunities for all kids. And I think the reality is that college is a big part of having opportunities. I also think that giving kids hope for what they can do after high school can dramatically impact what they do in high school. And I think the data in Corvallis really supports that. If you look at the graph up here, you can see that in the 2011-12 school year, Corvallis had a graduation rate of, I want to make sure I have it right, 67.5%, which was awful. It was embarrassing. And you can see that was the year that we brought in our program called Running Start. And I'm not saying that every one of these new graduates is a Running Start student, but I think that having hope of something after high school gave more kids motivation to meet the requirements of graduation, because that graduation meant a ticket into something that they didn't think was possible for them, and that was college. You can see that by this last school year, our graduation rate was 86. So to go from 62 to 86 was huge. I mean, that's huge and transformational. I could say a lot, but I want to first make sure these guys get a chance to hear their story. So I want to first introduce Journey Myers to share a little bit about her story and what she hopes to do in the future. So,
Can I just
introduce yourself.
Okay, my name is Journey Myers. I'm a senior at College Hill, and this is
so much better than the person sitting next to me.
Starting freshman year, I didn't really understand the value of school. I would skip classes, never do any homework, and could care less about what I was supposed to be learning. I had depression and anxiety that I allowed to run my schedule, and most days were harder than others. That habit trailed into my sophomore year when I was eventually suspended for listening to a speaker that was prohibited and failing my classes. Shortly after, my school counselor fought for a place at College Hill for me. I finally started to become excited about school. I was surrounded by the friends I started high school with, and new teachers that I liked. On March 10th, 2014, the love of my life killed herself, hardly 3 months into being at College Hill. The amount of grief that I felt pushed me over my edge. I could barely remember those few weeks after her death, but I do know that before April, I had tried meth for the first time. I had never, ever been into any type of drug like this at any point in my life. Instead of changing my mind, I ran with it. I progressively became an addict without even knowing. I would come to school high and uncomfortable and angry. Whenever I had to sit inside of the building, it was panic attacks, and I can only stay for segments at a time. As my drug use continued, I was placed into the after-school online program where I would mainly do testing, and even though it started at 3, it was still too much weight. All I wanted to do at that point was use, and that's exactly what I did. I never pictured myself to be the person I had become. I had a court date July 15th, 2014, for 3 charges. That day I was put on home ankle monitor and was sent to Jackson Street Youth Shelter. I couldn't imagine being without my drugs, so I slipped my ankle monitor off within 5 hours and ran for 2 months. September 8th, 2014, I was on my way to attempt to turn myself in when I was arrested on the spot. After spending 28 days in Lynn Benton Detention Center, I was sent to Baker City, Oregon, to a rehab facility called Elkhorn. Elkhorn saved my life. I spent 122 days learning how to live again, retraining my brain, and learning about NA. I came home on January 20th, 2015. I had no idea how hard the next year would be. Coming home wasn't as easy as coming back from vacation. Things were different, I was different, and I was a junior in high school with about 12 credits to make up. From being fresh out of rehab and on probation, struggling to stay afloat, I have managed to receive 2 awards from College Hill. These awards were the Phoenix Award and Student of the Month. I got off probation 6 months and 6 days earlier than I was supposed to, received my driving privileges back, and have 111 days clean off of meth. Maintaining my GPA has been hard throughout the years, but I put in work every day to make sure that by June I could put on my cap and gown and receive my diploma. I have no time to be lazy or not care about my education anymore. I want to be able to go to college and become something in this world, not just another statistic. I want to use the Running Start program to begin to pursue a career in alcohol and drug counseling so I can help others like me who have struggled in their life. I believe we should keep Running Start going just for the kids who couldn't maintain a 2.5 GPA or above throughout their own battles. Thank you.
Very much.
Next, I'd like to introduce Isaac Smart.
You can just pull the microphone over. It doesn't have to be real close. It'll work.
My name is Isaac Smart. I am a senior at College Hill High School in Corvallis School District. Albert Einstein was denied college. He failed the entrance exam, is what I was going to start this passage with. But after intensive research, I found out that it really was just a twist of the truth. He was actually too young to attend the college he applied for. I'm not here to talk about the once slow child who became a physics genius. I'm here to talk about my own story and what I plan to do with my story. That is because you really do write your own destiny so long as it obeys the laws of science. I have never been good at doing homework. It's never been an argument on whether or not I was too lazy to follow through with the after-school work. I just never had the place to do it. My life at home was a little different. I shared a room with my younger brother, who at the time was 2 or 3 years old. If anyone has younger siblings, you would know how hard it is to try to work on homework when you have become a giant punching bag or a monkey gym. My mother never enforced homework either. In all honesty, I can't remember a single time where she told me to do my homework. My dad at the time wasn't around. My mom wouldn't let him around. Not often, at least. Throughout a lot of my childhood, my dad was homeless or living with his mother. When I was 8, my mom decided it was time I lived with my dad, so I moved in with dad and grandma. In 4th grade, my dad got a job in Union Construction, and we moved into our own tiny house. Homework was never enforced by him either, though I do remember doing some there. After 4th grade, we moved all over the place. Portland for that summer, Oregon City for the beginning of 5th grade, Gresham for the other half, then back to Corvallis for middle school. I never did well in middle school either. I failed nearly every one of my classes. After middle school, I moved to Canby, a pit stop on our hopeful move to Olympia, Washington. It was the beginning of summer, and I lived 3 miles out of town. My only option was to play video games. When the school year came around, I was a freshman, and I was still playing video games. But I decided to try my hardest in school. I came home and actually did my homework. After a month or so, I was in belief that my dad and I were moving out and were finally going to move to Olympia. I stopped doing homework and skipped out on major projects at school. After failing 2 out of my 5 classes, I moved back to Corvallis once again. For the next 5 semesters, I would fail every single social studies and literature class I took and skip a total of 60 days of school. That's when my counselor decided College Hill High School would be a good place for me. And it was. It really was. It went from grades that went all over the alphabet to only the first letter. In less than a year, I've raised my GPA from a 1.8 to a 2.2. That doesn't seem like much, but it means the world to me. Sadly, even if I kept up my straight A's, I still couldn't reach my goal of a 2.5 GPA. But this school has brought me more than just good grades and an improved GPA. This school has taught me how to be a good worker, to put my all into anything I do, and most of all, it has taught me how to be a good leader. I had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do with my future before I came to College Hill. I had no plans of going to college, but now I see infinite possibilities of what I can do and what I can achieve. As of earlier this year, my life goals have been based around college, and I know for a fact that both of my parents can hardly afford their own bills, let alone my college. But if I do somehow manage to get into college, I would love to major in the hands-on skills, such as welding, woodshop, autos, and construction, and then get my bachelor's degree. Shortly after getting my bachelor's, my next step would be to get my teaching license and bring these skills back to College Hill. I will go to college to learn the skills that College Hill doesn't already have. I would love to give back to the community that taught me so well. I may not be any sort of comparison to Einstein, but I'd say I'm doing pretty well. As a student who went from awful grades to straight A's and graduating with honors, it is nice to think of myself as my own little Einstein. But where I stand financially and where my GPA sits, I cannot attain my hopes and dreams of showing other kids what to look forward to in life.
Thank you very much.
And now I'd like to introduce Kasaya Fafita.
My name is Kasaya Fafita. I'm a senior at College Hill High School, and I'm going to present what I've written. A second chance for the outcast, the unlucky, and the unfortunate. The Running Start programs give students like me and many more a chance at a potentially better life. So why would the Senate of Education Committee ever think about abolishing this program? What in the committee and what in this community is more in value to fund than the education of future teachers, business owners, leaders, and lawmakers? I myself did not do great in the days leading up to College Hill. I lived with my mom in Utah. After living there for a month, I moved out because my home life was unsafe, and started working about 30 hours a week to help my mom pay for my younger siblings' needs. Programs like Running Start pave the way for at-risk students to further their education. They give encouragement to students who would otherwise drop out. These programs inspire students to keep trying and work hard for their success in graduations. Interventions like the Running Start program work to decrease the amount of dropouts in our community by helping students envision opportunities beyond high school, thus setting an example for future generations to come, resulting in a chain effect of hard work and determination. Providing the youth with opportunities like the Running Start program ensures that communities are moving forward. Students who participate in the Running Start program are encouraged to further their education after high school by completing college courses at a local community college. I believe that receiving support during the first year of college is key to ensuring that all students, regardless of their social or economic background, have the chance to experience higher learning. Running Start enables students to gain a better idea of what they want to do in terms of college majors and career paths. This will give students the confidence and ability to climb higher in future job opportunities because they are given the opportunity to experience what they really enjoy doing in their college experience. Providing support for all students to succeed in education and create a good work ethic will make for a larger overall percentage of skilled working people in our society. The more educated and productive people means there will be less people in poverty and dependency on government aid. People who have good paying jobs and are financially stable are more likely to give back to their community. This positive cycle will keep thriving with programs like the Running Start, making sure we create an environment of successful people. We need to show our future generations that we as a committee can come together and support one another by making sure we support the success of all people in education. We as a community shouldn't just push unwanted problems under the rug. Running Start can give people hope and confidence to do great things. Studies have shown that in inner city schools that have programs similar to Running Start have lower crime rates in their communities and more students to go on to further their educations. If schools in urban centers such as Harlem, Oakland, and Los Angeles can do so much more to raise above their obstacles and help struggling students become more successful, why wouldn't we in the state of Oregon want to support the struggling students by giving us the same opportunities as other alternative learning students in other places? I'll propose my question one more time. What in our community is more worthy of support than the furthering of education of our youth in Oregon? In the words of a great philosopher, Aristotle, is your answer. All who have meditated upon the art of governing mankind have been convinced that the fate of empires depend on the education of youth. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? I guess I just want to say, did you have a follow-up comment?
I have a couple.
Sure.
First, I just want to say I think these are three outstanding young people that I want to make sure that we provide support and opportunity for them to pursue their goals and their dreams. And I would hate to see them not have that opportunity. I think that they have really worked hard and are deserving of that. I also want another couple pieces of data that I wanted us to see is that not only are programs like Running Start helping students go to college, but they're helping them to stay and have success through support in college. And a traditional student at LBCC, the average rate of persistence of students that return in their second year is 58%. Running Start in the last year had a 71% persistence rate. And so students who are at risk are going to college and having more success because they're getting support from a relationship that they already know in their local school district. And so not only is it my hope that these three young people who don't meet the criteria for Oregon Promise could go to college, but that they could stay and succeed and finish. And I just think we owe it to them to have that opportunity. And I could go on and talk to you about students who, a student who has an IEP who came to me this last week and said, I wonder if I should just get my modified diploma because then I could go to college. Because if I get my standard diploma, I won't have a 2.5 GPA and I won't be able to go. And I don't want to incentivize a student lowering the bar for herself to get a modified diploma. And yet in her mind, that was going to be her ticket. She'd be able to go to college with that, or she wouldn't with a standard diploma. This other student just completed a food drive for a local charity and discovered that she really wants to become a journalist, but she has a 1.8 GPA. She wouldn't be eligible. Here's a student who has a 3.61 GPA in her senior year, but because she had a rough freshman year, she got a 1.43 cumulative. This is an outstanding top student at College Hill. And I could go on and on. This is a list of our seniors this year who don't meet the GPA requirement at College Hill to go and be a part of Oregon Promise. And as we've gone through the application process, the standards are just, we're too high for them. And so I just hope that we can create opportunities for all kids to go to college. And I would love to make sure that we are requiring districts to provide them the support necessary to successfully get through that first year, which is going to be such a difficult hurdle. And we know from so many studies that if you can get through your first year taking some of those rigorous courses in math and writing, your chances of succeeding and graduating from college are so much higher. So if we're really going to change outcomes for students, particularly students on the margins, we need to change what we do. We've been doing this for a few years now. We've seen some dramatic results, and I would just beg you to support Bill 1537 and not take away the opportunity for us to do this work. Thank you.
And I just want to say that having been a student that had a hard time in school at particular times in my life, having the courage at your age to sit in front of this group of people and share your stories is really impressive, and you really need to know that. Also, there's an old saying that, you know your audience and therefore get ready for that. And the fact that I have been in two high schools, one that I went to and one that I was a principal of. And my colors in the high school I went to were green, and in the school that I principaled were purple. And the fact that you chose, to do that at this particular time shows great insight, and I am appreciative of you spending the time with us today and sharing with us. So thank you very much. It is truly appreciated. Senator Gelser.
Can I just say it? I am so proud to live in Corvallis and to listen to everything that each of you has done, and to be willing to talk about challenges that you've experienced, to acknowledge your own responsibility in some of those pieces, is extraordinary about who you are as people. And the ability to succeed says a lot about Mr. Wright and Aaron and the others that really are demonstrating in our district what that means to ask the question, what does it take for every student every time, and that it's not worth letting anybody fall behind. So both as the legislator representing that and a parent that has four kids in that district, I am so grateful every day for what's happening for our kids. So thank you for just being a phenomenal district.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, good job.
And with that, we'll have Rob Hess and Mike Solemn come on up.
Senator Roblin and Senator Canope and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity just to share a little bit our support of this bill, 1537, for fifth year. And I'll just read, you know.
Even though the students did it right and gave you an example,
yeah,
you still have to introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm Dr. Robert Hess from Superintendent Lebanon Community School District. And so I guess I get an F for failing that. Thank you for the correction.
Yes.
Appreciate that. So I just I want to just say that this process has been an example of how government should work. We started with a contentious issue with people on a very opposite sides of how this should work. And as one of the districts that's been doing this program for, you know, a dozen years, one of the early innovators of it, we've ended up in a place that will change how, you know, there's 25 different districts that have done these to some degree, some form and fashion, and this law puts rules around that, which is, and everyone had to compromise some to get to this place. So this is an example of some really good legislation, because it takes the Oregon Promise and it takes students that need a boost in getting to college that wouldn't qualify for that, and gives every child an opportunity to have that head start in college. And we know that many states across the country have programs of this nature and ways for kids to get that connection. And we also know that the finishing rate of four-year colleges is around 55%. The finishing rate of the graduation rate of community colleges at, 20%, more or less. And these type of programs help kids finish. Any students that go through the connection between high school and college do better. And what we plan to do in Lebanon is to take the system we've built and overlay Oregon Promise, overlay the Pell Grants, overlay this bill, and be able to meet everyone's need. And yeah, it will cost our district more to do that, but we're committed to these outcomes for kids. And I'll just read one of the students that said that asked me to share this today, and William says, the fifth-year program is a step in the right direction for education. It's given me a jump start on my college career. I'm glad for the opportunity. We need more programs like this, not less, programs that give people like me head starts on life and give others a chance at it. So I just encourage the support of this bill and know that a lot of work and effort and time has gone into it, and thank you for the opportunity to have a hearing on it.
Thank you.
Well, Senator Robin, Mike Solem, principal of Jervis High School. Really happy to be here. I'm going to kind of just share. I appreciate all you guys taking the time. I had no idea I was going to speak, but anybody that knows me knows that I'm very passionate about our kids, and what this has done has been pretty exciting. So let me just kind of start from the beginning here. Jervis High School, right at the road, we have about 65% Hispanic, 12% Russian, the rest kind of intermixed kids. It's rural. These kids basically don't have a lot of opportunities outside of high school. In the last 5 years, just came out last week, or Wednesday, I should say. I guess that was last week. It is Monday. Last 5 years, 91% or better graduation rate. The last three, 96 to 98% right there. Our kids do really well. But the thing is, once they graduate, what's next? They basically... construction. They've got painting, and like President Senator Courtney encouraged me this summer to watch McFarland USA, because those are our kids. Those are our kids. They find themselves in the fields. Now, of the graduating class last year of 82, we had 43 enrolled in the fifth-year program. Of those 43, now I hear things about, I want to be an engineer. I want to be an electrician. You know, I want to actually, you know, run a business. I don't want to work for somebody else. I want to be the boss, you know, and I want to aspire to do much greater things. So looking at my notes.
Yeah, no problem.
I don't want to sound like I'm kind of sharing a sob story, because it's really not a sob story. We all have challenges. We all have adversities and obstacles. At a small rural school, we have one counselor. We have several teachers that teach several discipline areas, you know, across curricular areas. And opposed to bigger schools where they have, you know, five or six counselors, they can offer classes like AP, IB, things like that. They've got a college and career readiness counselor. I know this. My first administrative job was at Thurston High School, and just to see the resources at that school compared to Jervis High School, it's amazing. So we wear a lot of different hats, but this has given these kids an opportunity to strive for bigger and better things, and I really would appreciate the serious consideration to think about those kids that don't have the opportunities that might come from a two-parent family that is high on the SES. I know it's all about individual try and all that kind of stuff as well, so you got to incentivize them some way, and this program has done that. I wish I had an opportunity to bring some of the kids before you to kind of share some of their stories, but and I appreciate hearing the stories from the kids from Corvallis. So thank you very much for giving me the opportunity. Question?
Yep. Sure. Thank you. Now, let me back you up. You said, now, these kids, when they graduate, they don't have much opportunity. That was the exact impetus for passing the Oregon Promise. Okay? So that used to be true. Now those kids have an opportunity. They just go right down the road at Chemeketa or Portland Community or wherever. So help me understand then why that's not an option for those kids.
It's an option, and it's a great option. They need a push. Basically, these kids, I want to make sure I can kind of clearly state this. They don't have a mom and dad at home, most of them. Some of them do, you know, two-parent families. These aren't kids with... this program, I'm going to go back up just a second here. 86% of the kids that enroll in a fifth-year program stay in college. You know, that's... what, versus the 47-48% normal dropout rate the freshman year. So with the high school and the college working together, they can kind of partner and help these kids continue on. I don't know if I have a great answer for you, Senator Haas, but just the Oregon Prom, I mean, this is kind of like hand-holding them and getting them to actually take part. I had all my seniors this year fill out the Oregon Promise. You know, but when I talked to them about, you know, having the opportunity for, you know, a free year of college and then see what, you know, see where that goes, I met with some pretty big encouragement outside of filling out a form. Maybe, you know, you can inspire this. And a lot of these kids don't have the 2.5 GPA either, you know.
Yes.
Thank you, Senator Roblin. And I don't know if you can answer this question. Maybe Senator Gelser can help me. But how many kids statewide are we talking about that would probably participate in this program?
So, Chair Roblin, Senator Bertschiger, I've been trying to track down that number, and we worked very hard to do that. And poor Richard knows because he tried to compile the numbers. We actually contacted every single school district that operates a program and asked them to define who is each of the kids. Because what we're talking about are kids that districts wouldn't already be claiming state school fund for. So there is no good answer to that. We don't know because we don't keep the data in that way. It's a smaller number than what we were told last year because that covered a bunch of other folks. I've got some roughish numbers that I can track down for you over the next couple minutes, and if that would be helpful.
I'll talk to you back.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I can have it on Wednesday when we have the next public hearing as well.
Thank you.
Other questions? I guess the statement that I would make is that I think Oregon Promise is work in progress that I hope continues to make it opportunities for every kid. It is something I have a lot of faith in. We had to do it, as you know, on the cheap, kind of. I think it's important that in the long term we continue to work with that. I heard from Lebanon that you're looking at your kids and figuring out which ones are which and try to do some stuff to make sure that the lasting stability of the program continues using the promise. I hope that that is something that you share with other schools so that they can work on that. And finally, I hope that people will sincerely look at what you've done with your fifth-year programs and find out what it is that doubles the completion rate in first year and all these other things so that we can capitalize on doing that maybe in a different way. You know, yeah. The counseling, maybe there's a way to share people that can go to your school and another school and whatever to make it work. But it's obvious, the statistics from Corvallis, the statistics that have been given in hearsay from the other programs, because we haven't seen that same presentation, about helping completion and other things, all of us should want that to happen. And I know that Senator Haas wanted that to happen. That's why we have the fifth year and a bunch of other people, because we had to try to come up with a plan that works for the whole state. I've had the same question with Senator Gelser about how many kids. We don't keep GPAs because every school does GPAs different, and therefore the state doesn't see any value in having that data. It's been a hard number to even get. So hopefully we can learn from this. Hopefully Lebanon, as you move forward in how you're going to work with the program, you'll share that with some of the other schools. I know that the Mid-Valley has a lot of schools that have been talking to each other for a while.
Yeah.
But again, we will come back and look at this in a couple of years, and it is essential to us that it doesn't break the back of the school fund for the rest of everybody else. I think that's true of you guys as well. But finding the answers over the next few years is really important to me.
And Mr. Chair?
Yep.
I just wanted to clarify, too, we have a lot of Mid-Valley folks, but participating in the conversation and helping to develop this bill were people from Klamath Falls, Redmond, Lane Community College, Eugene. So it's not just that that Mid-Valley service district. It's largely smallish, ruralish school districts.
Thank you.
Thank you. There's a bill that's starting in the House side tomorrow that will set aside some money for to help the Oregon Promise with more mentors and advisors handholding. I wish it weren't true, but it really is a necessary part to make this successful. In fact, it's critical. But I can't help but say this is still a situation where some school districts are able to do this and others are not. I mean, you have some real hard cases in Jervis, some really difficult situations. But I'll tell you something. Portland has many more than you have, and they're not doing this. Beaverton has the largest homeless population of kids in any school district in the state, more than even Portland. So we're still dealing with an issue where some school districts will be taking money for college in the same distribution formula as schools who are not doing that. So there is still a fairness issue that's outstanding. I'm not saying shut it all down now. I just want everybody to recognize here we're all in this together. We want all of our kids to get to college one way or another. There is a fairness issue.
Can I offer a comment?
Yeah, please. Both of you.
I just wanted to say it's all about kids, and I appreciate that, and I see that being the focus here. And whether you're Portland, Clackamas, you know, wherever, you know, rural Lebanon, you're over Eastern Oregon or Jervis, you deserve the same chance. You know, I totally agree with that. And I mean, we as educators got in this field because we believe that. So I appreciate you guys continuing to wanting to support that.
It's my understanding that this bill will allow any district to be able to participate. Is that correct? 1537?
So, Chair Roblin, I may not have mentioned that. Yes, this opens up and assumes that any district across the state that wanted to do it, in order to participate, they have to meet those requirements. They have to, it has to be connected to a plan for increasing high school graduation rates. There has to be a written policy for that. They have to have requirements about the types of courses students can take. It can only be classes that work towards a degree. They have to have the dedicated FTE to do the twice a week, or not twice, twice a month, one-to-one face-to-face visits. And the impact of that, it's going to cost districts more to do this than what they are able to draw down in the formula.
So that, to me, it addresses the fairness issue with everyone being able to, any district that wants to build this program would be able to.
The only thing I would say is the program that you have set up before was available to every school district, every student in the state as well.
Yes,
I mean,
correct.
That doesn't change. What changed is our understanding that if we kept doing what we were doing,
the cost,
we couldn't afford it. It would not have worked.
And Mr. Chair, the sideboards on the cost, which I think was really the key issue, what happens if Portland comes in, or what happens if Beaverton comes in? Although I recently learned Beaverton actually does do this in a small way. They have some fifth-year students. But the sideboards on this are that if you have to have one for one, so you can only have, for every one student that is a postgraduate scholar, you have to have one that is not. You have to have a written contract with your community college. The community college has some capacity issues, so it can't be everyone. There's going to have to be this prioritization. There's the decrease in the funding that comes along with it, and there are the requirements on the district which also impact the amount of money that you can get. And we limit the attractiveness of this to students as well. You can't pick which community college you want to go to. You just get one choice, and the one that's in your area. And if you're on an interdistrict transfer or open enrollment, or you're attending ORCA, it's the school you graduated from. So if you attend ORCA, you need to go to Santee Am. You got to live in that district, and you got to go to that community college. So those are the kinds of very extreme kinds of sideboards that limit that cost for people to participate.
And Senator Roblin and Senator
Betcher.
Betcher.
Didn't take German in school?
No. I should have. There is data from the four-year cohort rates. There were 1,298 students that received their diploma awarded, but earned but not awarded last year. So of the 1,298, most of those will qualify for Oregon Promise, or a large percentage, but there will be some that won't. And what this bill would do is allow the ones who don't qualify for Oregon Promise to be able to participate in that same opportunity. So we just feel, with a state that's committed to equity, that it's only right that students who don't have the GPA to qualify would have an opportunity to keep going, because as you heard from the students today, sometimes life happens and that 2-point GPA can't be attained, and we don't think someone's opportunities for that help getting to college should prevent that.
Yes, Senator Betcher.
And I agree with your statement. Coming from a family full of educators, I can always remember what my dad said: not everybody is college material. And that's why I push, career education, because there's a certain amount of people that go that way too. And, how do we cross that? And that's the equitable part too, is to give those folks that ability to go learn a skill. And so I'm worried, how do we do that? I'll give myself an example. I went to college and everything, but a lot of that was a waste of time, because at the end of it, I went a different, totally different direction, didn't really use any of what I was going for. So, how do we find that out early? How do we expose these kids to all these different things so that they can find their pathway? And that's what I'm very concerned about.
CTE is huge right now, and I want to just comment on your comment basically is, a lot of these programs for a kid to be, apprenticeship or something like that, they need to complete certain, I call them LACC classes. So a lot of the same basic courses that they need to advance to whatever studies area, whatever area they want to actually, go into. And this will provide that. The basic skills, I talked about electrician, I talked about, some welders. They have to take some of these same courses, the math, the reading, the language arts, that kind of stuff, to actually go and actually get in that specialty area. And so this would help provide that foundation so they could actually aspire to get to that next level, which you go into the workforce after their sophomore year with a degree in the field that you're talking about. So,
okay, thank you very much. We'll be taking this up again on Wednesday, but I want the conversation to begin. These short sessions are so very short that we have very little time to have the conversation.
We're going to feel pretty long by then.
So with that, we'll close the informational hearing, and we'll open an informational hearing on Senate Bill 1564, and we'll have a short explanation, and Cindy Hunt and Michael Whitfung can come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1564 transfers reporting requirements related to the ELL, English Language Learner programs, from school districts to the Department of Education, and it adjusts timelines for making those reports, declares an emergency, effective on passage.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah. Chair Roblin, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Hunt. I'm the Government Legal Affairs Manager for the Oregon Department of Education. And with me today is?
Mike Wilfong, Director of School Finance, School Facilities for the department.
Okay. I'm going to start by putting this bill in context, because it's amending a bill from the 2015 session called House Bill 3499, which did not actually come through this committee. Your friends in the House put the bill together, and then it went directly to Ways and Means. And the bill was very significant for our students who are English language learners in the state. What 3499 essentially did was, for the first time in Oregon, the state invested general fund dollars for our English language learner population, which is one of our fastest growing populations in the state. And what 3499 did was, it directed a comprehensive approach to supporting these students by directing the department to have a statewide ELL SEL plan, roll out that statewide plan. Also, it directed increased transparency in the collection of information and data from school districts about how they're expending their dollars relating to ELL students. It also put in place a system of supports and progressive interventions for those districts who are not having, are not doing as well by our ELL students as we would like. So the department here shortly in the next couple of months will be naming probably around 30 districts as districts in need of improvement for the next 4 years, and then working very directly with those districts. And so all that's to say that one of the components also was uniform budget coding and annual reporting. And the bill also had the department do two advisory groups to advise us on this work. So one of the groups was around the supports to school districts and naming improvement, or naming these districts, and also around long-term strategies relating to our EL students. But the other group was on budget coding and annual reporting, and that is what Mr. Wiltfong had the opportunity to staff, and it is out of the work of that group that we have Senate Bill 1564.
Thanks, Cindy. With that work with the budget of the Finance Advisory Group, we were looking through subsection 6 of the House bill, and we noticed that a lot of the data elements were already reported to the department by the school districts. And it's one of the complaints that we receive from the school districts oftentimes is that, you know, you keep asking for the same data just in different formats. So we thought, we got to work, we thought, you know, looking at this, and the bill, the proposed technical fix, really does two things. It's the responsibility reporting and trying to address that a lot of that data already lives at the department. It's just a matter of taking that information and putting it into a meaningful report. So the other aspect that we want to address is the consistency of the reports from the of the data and moving forward. And the concern that I had there is the level of ability to make create meaningful reports and send those departments varies across the state. My thinking was that if the department was compiling that information, we'd have a much more consistent report moving forward. And then again, we would be using that information, the department would be using that information to validate when we create our own report to the legislature anyway. And so again, that, a lot of that work would already be being done by the department. And again, it's also the relieving one of the reporting requirements for the school districts. And actually, when we talked about this moving forward with this technical fix, when we were speaking to the school business officials at their fall conference, actually, we received a round of applause that the department was taking this initiative to try to alleviate one, at least one reporting requirement. The other aspect that we tried to address in the technical fix is the timing of the data used. Initially, the report just shortly after the school year closed in June, that the initial proposal identified that the report would be due in July. And again, at that point, the financial information and much of the data that's used in ADM, it hasn't been validated by either an auditing firm or even the school district as a whole. And so what we proposed there is instead of using the data immediately after the school year closes, that we would use the previous year's school data. And with that, the data would be not an estimate at that point. It would actually be finalized actual data. It wouldn't, and again, it would be much more meaningful moving forward for policy discussion. So those are some of the two primary objectives of the technical fix.
So any questions? I will say that we had a Lane County Superintendent's meeting. I was on it by phone. And when I mentioned this bill, that was the time when I got the most nods in the room, they were telling me. One less report was something that they all saw as a positive reason for the legislature to get together. So I agree with that. Mm-hmm. Received well.
Okay. Thank you.
No other questions. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll close our informational hearing. And we'll open an informational hearing on the removal of the 2017 sunset on open enrollment, and I'll give you the gavel because I'm going to go down and speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 1566 removes the sunset on provisions that allow students whose legal residence is not within the school district to attend schools in district as a resident if the student receives written consent. This is commonly called open enrollment. Senate Bill 1566 declares an emergency and is effective on passage.
So So Kim Thatcher was not here today. She originally wrote the bill, and I supported the original bill that did away with it. For the record, Arnie Roblin.
Oh, another half.
Just because everybody had it was important for
your
me.
Your GPA is slumping.
Yes. District 5. The Oregon coast. Actually, some of the people have a little bit of the Oregon coast, so Coos Bay to Tillamook Bay and into Sheridan and Falls City. This bill was something that meant a lot to me when it first came up. We have transfer policies. There's a lot of them. We've tried to limit that. I still think there's some work that can need to be done. And I'm, a little later, I'm going to have Morgan Allen come up and talk some about that, because part of the issue, whether it's transfer or whether it's open enrollment, is an issue for me about making sure that we get kids, students, to the right place for them to learn. Because for me, I got into education to help every kid have the best possible potential. As a high school principal, I had superintendents that embraced the idea of open enrollment. So our school district, whether other school districts did or didn't, kind of embraced that idea. And I had a lot of exit interviews with parents who said they needed to go to another school district, and you know, would we let them go? And I said, our school district would, but we'd love to have a conversation. And my conversation always started, if you're trying to get a new start, and you think that there's another place where that would help with you, I think that's a great thing. But if you're trying to avoid the problems that you have at our school, if you don't change or don't see that in yourself, and if the parent doesn't understand their responsibility in it, going to a new school will only prolong the agony, because it will happen. And I had a number of parents come back to me and thank me for that conversation, because they did have some of the similar problems. And I want people and parents and school districts to work together for that child. And the reality of open enrollment to me as a principal was to be able to say, parent, I want to work with you. You are the number one teacher in kids' lives. Always will be, whether we want to or not. We would love to embrace that with you and make this school work for you. If it's not, we'd love to have you go to the place where you can work with that school district to be successful. I still believe that in my heart. There are times when it doesn't always work, but having an open conversation about it, I think, is really important. And to me, that's the essence of what open enrollment. It forces the conversation between parent and student, between parent and school district, and between parent, student, and school district. And those are important conversations. You can have them in different ways. Transfer is one of them, but it got to be so complex. And it took so much effort from parents. A lot of them were intimidated by coming to the school in the first place. And I want to make those processes ones in which we don't lose time with that child where they should be in a classroom getting an education. So when Kim talked to me about this bill, I said, yes, I believe that removing the sunset is important. Allowing it to go on in a way in which parents feel secure that they've made choices for the kids and they're working, that they work. And I want to be clear, and I think Morgan can talk a little about this too. I do believe that those kids that are there can stay, and I don't think whether it goes this bill passed or not, students who are already enrolled will get to continue that. So, and I think the sideboards we put around it, school districts can only take so many kids. They know how many that there are and there are available, and this opens, continues that open process of letting people know where those available spaces are. So I look forward to answering questions and asking things, and I hope we have a really robust conversation about this. And I am committed to having a robust conversation in the future about this bill and about transfers in general, because it's something we didn't finish up last time because we had other things on our plate. And I know Sarah cares about that too. So any questions, I'd be glad to answer. Thank you.
Morgan Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Morgan Allen here on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association. And as you remember, in 2011, we had a quite sizable education package, and this bill was part of that open enrollment. And I wanted to share some thoughts from the School Boards Association perspective. And I'll be real honest, this is something that, like many issues here, fifth year open enrollment, other issues, we have a lot of mixed opinions and strong feelings about those issues amongst our membership. But what I want to do is kind of highlight some of the things consistently we hear folks talk about and sort of potentially propose some ideas moving forward in the future. So I think a couple things that we need to get clear about the bill. So the bill has a July 1st, 2017 sunset. So we still have open enrollment for sure in the 2016-17 school year. And I believe, and I've asked OD to verify this, and they may or may not agree with me, but I believe the way the bill's written, we would still have it for 2017-18. So we still have a couple years potentially. I know there's been some concern raised about the kids that have already transferred, and I don't believe sunset, if the sunset were to occur, that any of those kids would be disrupted. Nothing would impact those students, and certainly we wouldn't want that to happen. Some of the other things that we hear, we hear anecdotal stories about who's taking advantage of open enrollment. We've talked a lot about equity on issues. We talked about that with the fifth year. We talk about that in many issues here. And we have heard from some districts some concerns that it's mostly upper middle class white students that are taking advantage of open enrollment because they have the ability and means to do that. And I think that's something we need to have a conversation about. Unfortunately, we don't have any data about that because the department doesn't collect any. But I don't think it would be too hard to get some information about who's taking advantage of, and I think that's an important question to look at. The other thing we hear from folks a lot, too, is a lot of times when we're talking about whether it's inter-district transfers or open enrollment, we're talking about the students who want to make a change or want to make a move. And the second, there's another part to that conversation, and Senator Roblin, you talked about this a little bit, is sort of what about the other students that remain in those schools, and how does kids coming and going impact those students as well? It's very similar to the idea of the fifth year and the funding, and obviously funding drives a lot of these conversations. When you have more students or less students, you have more or less resources for your classroom. It has that impact on all those students. So we think that needs to be part of the conversation as we address this. But I think the primary issue that Senator Roblin hinted at that we think needs to be addressed is we have two systems. Really, actually, there's six ways, but I'll only talk about two of them. We have inter-district transfers. We have open enrollment. So we have two different systems that allow students to move between school districts. And they both have different sets of rules, different sets of timelines. Some of them make allowances for emergencies. You know, transfer tries to do that. Open enrollment doesn't. So there's pluses and minuses, obviously, to both systems. And with those differing rules and those differing calendars, it's confusing for school district folks. But it's really confusing for parents and families because school districts have a choice to do open enrollment or transfers or both or neither. So you have this mix across the state, this sort of patchwork of people doing it different ways, and that creates confusion in a lot of areas. The other thing that the Senator Roblin alluded to is just since we passed open enrollment in 2011, each session, 2013, 2014, and 2015, the legislature has had to pass a bill to address some of the unintended consequences with those changes that have been made to both inter-district transfer and open enrollment. If you remember, the big one for open enrollment was we had immediately had some school districts that started marketing. Recruiting students, sending mailers and flyers and putting ads in newspapers and offering incentives to come to their school districts. I still have a couple of those flyers on my desk, and we came in here and you passed a bill to say you can't do that. You can't use your state school fund money. You can't use your local money to try to recruit students. You can still have open houses. You can still have information available about your school, but we don't want you mailing flyers into other things. The other thing that's happening, people were driving buses quite some distance into their neighboring school districts, and there's a question whether that's the appropriate use of transportation grant dollars. So you put some limitations on that as well. So there have been issues that have come up, and I think that's what I'm saying is kind of a long-winded way of saying that I think what we really need to do before we start talking about lifting the sunset is, you know, confirm some of these things. I believe we do have some more time, and we need to have a more comprehensive conversation about what the system looks like in Oregon. Because I think, again, we want to come up with a system that works for parents, that works for districts, and most importantly, is fair and equitable to all kids, not just the kids that want to move around. So I'd be happy to answer any questions. And you save yourself from hearing me come on Wednesday.
Yeah, and I thank you for doing this because I think it needs to be on the table before we do something. There's a part of me that says, and I found this to be true as a principal, 99% of the parents and kids want to be in the school they live in. I mean, they really do. It's not that they want to go someplace else. and it's generally some kind of extreme issue that creates it. Most school districts try to figure out how to make that happen for the kids, always have. But there are situations where we get into places where that's not true, and I need to have, personally, a peace of mind that at the end of the day, that parent and that child make a decision based on they think their needs are to get into another public school is really important. And we really have a third one. Charter schools have a totally different understanding about whether you can go in and out of districts because they're charter schools. So I would love to come up to that even playing field where everybody has the same expectations. And I agree with you. The emergency ones in particular, this doesn't work for. Open enrollment doesn't. Those are really, you have to have some kind of district transfer, inter-district transfer, something that can work.
Yeah, and Senator Gelser's bill last session, we were able to put in those provisions to protect those students for emergencies, for transfers and things like that. So, and the department's still kind of working on how that works. But.
And we continue to work. There's a lot of good statistics out there that say that a student who transfers at any particular time in during the school year when it's already started, that they almost lose a year of school. I mean, it's hard for kids to transfer to new schools and make the adjustments necessary to make things work. If you do it over the summer, you have a much better chance, but it's still, all of these things are impact a kid's ability to learn and a kid's ability to continue to progress. So I hope we can figure out where it was. One of the ones that used to always bother me was military transfers. We've done a lot better with that now because you'd find kids that were doing just fine where the school they were at, and then the military family moves, and the counselor sits down with them and says, sorry, you don't have enough credits to graduate. And then you call back to the other school, and they said, oh, yeah, he was right on track. So how did that happen? Different states have different requirements. I think we've come up with solutions to some of that stuff, and I think those are really important things for kids and families. So thank you, Morgan, for surfacing the ideas, and we'll have a bigger discussion on
Wednesday. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Sir. I'm deeply concerned that if we were to come up with a policy that made sense, was simple, that everybody understood and served kids, that Morgan wouldn't come to my office anymore for conversations. And so
that's a very good concern.
Oh, you can threaten him with all sorts of stuff. It's still
and I do actually very much appreciate, Morgan, your thoughtfulness and your willingness to have the conversations. So I agree with that. Anything else? Thank you very much. Do we know if she was coming? Oh, okay. So with that, we will close that informational hearing, and I think that's all we have for today. So
you're more efficient than Chair Gelser.
Wait, you were last week.
Oh, I'll open. Talk about this bill if she wished to.
Thank you.
We had a hard time finding her. She showed up, so we will allow her to say a few words.
I appreciate it, and
so
I'll
it is
be brief.
Information hearing is still open for open.
Thank you, Chair Rowland, member of the committee. For the record, Julie Parrish, House District 37, West 112. Really excited to be here talking about this bill today. Real brief history, and I don't know who testified before me, so if you...
Myself and Morgan.
Awesome. Thank you. So in 2011, my freshman year, we passed House Bill 3681A. Came out of... there were two bills that year. I had a bill that was a different number. There was one, another number, and we had some drama, as Senator Gelser will remember, and suddenly came out of the medication package. And this bill was one that I brought forward for when I had originally drafted a version of it for two reasons. I had literally sat in a school board meeting one night until very late, very contentious meeting, and a gentleman in the back waited for all the rest of the school board drama to finally get to the point where he got a chance to go advocate for his daughter. And he shared with the school board that his daughter was being bullied. His daughter wanted to go to Oregon City from Westland Wilsonville Schools. Her friends were there where they had sports, and daughter felt like there was community there for her. And this gentleman sat till 1:30 at night to have the school district gavel down on him and say, nope, we're not letting you leave. And I thought about that, and I was like, you know, and I wasn't even running for office that night. And I did, about 5 days later, I declared for office. And so just there as a mother listening to that, and I just went, wow, that is stunning. And I look at my own experience.
out of my mother's six children, I'm the only one who graduated from high school. I went to five elementary schools, three middle schools, did not attend eighth grade, and went to two high schools. And so the fact that I'm even here today in this capacity and getting to testify is nothing short of a miracle. And when I think about people like my siblings who were so moved around in the system and there was no stability, it was a reason to bring that bill. I also think of a woman who is my the mother of my two nieces who, when I got elected, was on employment-related daycare, working a minimum wage type job, and had to lie to the Hillsborough School Board to put her child into Hillsborough because she lived in Southeast Portland, but her job was in Hillsborough schools. So she used a parent's address and said, here's where we reside, and was trying to make it work with her daughter going to school. So, I mean, those are just really personal one-off experiences that I've seen, which brought me to the bill. And we eventually got it passed. 5 years has gone by. The sky did not fall. Washington State does this all day, every day, and they have for two decades, where they let kids move without sort of the weird process that we kind of created. Kids can in Washington can move from district, and the money moves, and there's no notification. I mean, and they've done it for 20 years, and arguably their education outcomes are a little different than ours. In 2011, that same year we brought this bill, there was a mom in, I believe, Ohio, who was jailed for lying about residency. She spent 10 days in jail because she tried to move her child into a different school district, and that made national news. So we have an opportunity to act on this. There's another bill on the House side that also included the multiple authorizer sunset, because that bill it was up as well. And so we're hoping that we can maybe do something. If this one comes out of this side and multiple authorizers can come out of the other, then we'll lift those two sunsets. I understand that there are still people who don't like this, and I appreciate that. But it's working for kids. And I was in my school district this last week on the 27th, talking to a group of civics kids, and they said, well, what are some of the things you're working on? And I explained this bill, and several of those kids raised their hand and went, wait a minute, we're from Canby Schools. What's this going to do to us? Like, we want to finish our, and they were juniors, and we want to finish our senior year here. I said, well, I think, if I recall right, you're grandfathered in, but your siblings aren't. And the original bill does not allow for siblings to move under open enrollment. So we've created some problems there. I know that there are some school districts who are actively using this, and it's making sense for their kids. And if really the purpose is to serve education to children in the time, place, and manner and works for the family, we need to act on this and make it move. I will say, because I get that there are some, still some people in this building who don't care for this legislation, I do have an amendment proposed. You don't have it today, but I will just briefly describe that it would extend us for five more years. It would this time ask the Department of Education to capture some analytical data so we can understand who's using open enrollment. So when it comes back up 5 years from now, we'll understand better who's impacted. I know that there are pockets of districts like mine where the first year we did open enrollment, 192 kids came. And I know Forest Grove and, some of the school districts in Lane County, I mean, people are using this across the state. And right now we don't know what the impact is if we suddenly pulled the plug. So I think at a minimum, we need to consider extending the sunset. But obviously, I love the idea that kids can move without borders. I'd love to do the whole thing. I'm also a realist. So with that, I'll just take any questions and really thank you for making this a priority, Senator, on the very first day. You had the Monday session that day when the ed bills failed. You were back on Tuesday in your chair. You were wonderful to me that week. It was a rough week for me personally, and I just, continue to thank you for your support those days on the bills that mattered to me most. So thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now we'll close for the second time our informational hearing on open enrollment. And with that, we will adjourn.
I stole all the sign-in sheets.